Well, hello there. You are about to enter the mind of the mindset maniac. Your mindset is the most important part of your existence. Don't believe me? You will. With a healthy, adaptive, and expansive mindset, you can achieve anything, and you can learn to use every challenge in your life to benefit you in some way. I am here to teach you all the ways your mindset dictates your current experiences in life and ultimately your future. This podcast will teach you applicable tools and resources that you can start applying today to improve your life. So what are we waiting for? Let's go ahead and jump right in. What is up, my friends? Welcome back to another episode of The Mindset Maniac. I am Leslie Krivar, your host and Mindset Maniac, and I am a newly 38-year-old woman. it would be last week at this point, while you're maybe listening to this for the first time, but depending on when you're listening to this, really, it could be any point in time. So let's just say as of January 24th, 2024, I am a freshly 38-year-old woman, which I should say over and over to myself so that I really like solidify that age, because prior to this year, I actually thought that I was 37 for 3 years in a row. So starting at what would have been 33, I just thought I was 37. I don't know. Well, part of me knows where this came from. I was pregnant when I turned 30, and I felt like that was an injustice to the dirty 30. I really wanted to celebrate 30 in a big way. And so I kind of like in my brain put 30 on hold, and we ended up celebrating it. My husband and my best friend and her husband the following year, like really celebrating it in Vegas. And we called it 30 part two. And we had so much fun. But I think at that point, when I like delayed my 30th birthday, my brain just like malfunctioned on how old I was from there, because since that point, it's been like a running joke between Anthony and I, like, that I never know how old I am. And I kind of look at him when someone asks, like, how old am I? I don't know. I like double check with him first. So I got to really solidify 38, but I feel like 38, man, is off to such a wonderful start. And so I'm going to really remember. I'm going to remember all parts of it. And last week, as I kicked off my birthday week, it was such a cool week. Anthony, since we've been together, so that's been almost over 12 years now. I got to do the math. But he started doing a birthday week when we got together. And I'm like, what the heck's a birthday week? Well, I found out very quickly because the week, so like, let's say, for example, if my birthday was on a Sunday, the Sunday before, he would just like leave me a card and like a small little gift, sometimes, not always, but something meaningful. And like, I would have a card and or a little gift every single day of the week leading up to my actual birthday. And he's done that for over a decade now. So it's just so special. And it's not about a gift. It's not about anything other than just like making me feel like super loved. And that's exactly how I feel. And so this year was no exception. He, you know, did that at little small gifts like throughout the week that were really special. But as always, like very thoughtful, loving cards. And he always writes like sentimental things in there and usually other inappropriate things, like depending on the day. But it's always so special. And I love that like he's modeling that for Watson as well. You know, Watson gets to be a part of it. He goes and picks out the cards. He's super excited for birthday week. And I really saw that like bleed in to Watson this year for the first time. I think like him almost being 8, he's just becoming more mature and more aware and more independent. And so on the day of my actual birthday, I was up around like a little before 6:30, getting ready to get my day started. And I hear him out in the living room, like stirring around. And I know Watson well enough that when I hear him out anywhere in the morning and he hasn't already come in to say good morning, that he's like up to something, he's working on something and he wants it to be a surprise. So I heard him out here and I'm thinking, oh, he's up to something. So I stayed in my room, and about 15 minutes later, he comes in and he's like, can you come out in the living room? And I walk out, and what this little boy had done to decorate our living room and kitchen spaces was like amazing. I mean, he had to have been up for, I mean, he had been working on this for at least 45 minutes, because what he did was he took construction paper and he cut out at least 50 individual like little strips. And then, so he cut each one of those out, all different colors, and then he individually taped them to like the entire house. I mean, walls, plants, cabinets, refrigerator, the couch, chandeliers, doors, walkways, like there was something everywhere. And he was just so excited and so proud. And then he made his own little version of a birthday cake, which was a Justin's cup, which is like the organic healthy version of like a Reese cup that he eats. So he took one of those and then he put it on top of a little granola ball and then like stuck a candle in there and sang me happy birthday. So it was just such a special morning. Birthday week got, you know, kicked off so beautifully, and then the birthday was so special. And then the rest of the week was just so great. Anthony and I snuck off to Amish country and stayed in these little honeycombs. So if you're local to Ohio, you have to check this place out. It's called the Inn at Honey Run. And they have these little rooms that are just dug up into the side of like a big hill. And so it's called a honeycomb because literally it looks like you're like stuffed in here and kind of like encased in this little side of the hill, which you are. And they're just super romantic, and they have like fireplaces, and they're connected to this like very incredible, I think it's like a 4-star dining, 5-star, I don't know which one goes for which restaurants or hotels, but whatever, it's like top-notch dining, very small select menu. And then it's in the heart, like I said, of Amish country. So it's just really beautiful, really cool out there. You can walk around and feed the goats, and it's just very isolated, but in a really good way. So we did that. I spent a full day with my best friend. We did dinner. We went and like got our nails done. We went to a comedy show. So we had so much fun. I got coffee with my sis, and we're still kind of rolling the festivities into this week as well. So there's a point to me telling you all of this, other than just wanting to update you on my life and my birthday week, because I love birthday. The point is that aging, in my opinion, should be something that we celebrate like to its fullest. And I don't know who the author of this quote is, but I heard a quote so many years ago, I mean maybe 15 years ago, and it said, what an honor it is to grow old. And I remember like reading this, and this just really, really stuck with me. And I remember when I read it, I was working at a restaurant in like a, it was like a high-end restaurant. We had a lot of high-end clients come in there, and a lot of women at this time who, like, I was in my early 20s, and so they were probably in their like 40s, mid 40s, maybe 50s. I don't even know. And here's the reason I don't know, is because they had so much work done that I didn't know how old they were. But I could just tell that they had a lot of work done. And I just remember thinking, like, why are we trying to hide our age? Like, I get it. Like, this is not a podcast to like shame Botox or skin treatments or anything like that. It's not. The point of it is to say, when we are at a place where we are ashamed for aging, or we don't want to have another birthday because we don't like the idea of growing older, I think that puts us in a really dangerous mindset for many reasons that I'm going to explore in this episode. But one of them being like, even just from a place of like gratitude, right? To continue to age and to have a birthday means that you have lived another year, which, to put that into perspective, there's a lot of people dying every year, right? There's a lot of people dying every day that will never get another birthday. So for every moment or every time that I hear someone joke about, you know, not wanting to celebrate their birthday or joking about their age or wanting to pretend they're not as old as they are, I'm like, gosh, like somebody might just be sitting there thinking like, who maybe has lost someone recently or maybe is ill themselves would be like, you know what? I only wish that this person was able to see this age, or I only wish that I was going to see this age. So that always just stuck with me, right? This reminder of like what an honor it is to grow old, because it is. To grow old means that we have gotten to be on this earth and to experience this life and everything that comes with it. And the other part of this, and the part that I really want to dig into in this episode today, is the danger in putting down and almost shaming aging, and how that has had a very negative effect on our culture and especially the younger generations, unknowingly to them. And, you know, partly the way that this came up was obviously this mindset that I already have around how I see aging and how I, you know, want to always remember that it is an honor. But the other part of it came up when I was reading a book, and I'll link it in the show notes, called The Collapse of Parenting. If you are a parent or you're ever thinking about becoming a parent, get this book. This book is incredible with helping us see the importance in our role as the parents in our child's lives, how we need to be the authority figure in our child's lives and what that looks like. You know, it's not just being, it's not being a dictator. It's not being this overly dominant figure in their life, but like, how do we maintain this sense of authority with love and with compassion without falling too far in the other direction where we're letting our kids just kind of like, willy-nilly run their own lives with us being very passive as parents. So love this book. Like I said, I'll link it in the show notes. But there's a point in this book early on where he talks about how we have taken this turn culturally with how we view our elders and how we view people who are older in such a different way than years prior, and in such a different way than other cultures do. And so one point that he talks about is, so let's say culturally, right? How in the United States, we do a pretty good job of just like discarding our elders as they age, right? We like dump them in homes, or like even if they're not in homes, but maybe they live with us or they're still living on their own with assistance, like their existence isn't like very meaningful for the most part. Now, I'm not saying that it's like this for every single human, but when you see the amount of nursing homes and when you see elders and kind of like the way that they're living out that and that last chunk of their lives, it doesn't seem like it is like it just seems like almost wasting time, if you will. This is just my perspective, and I'm measuring this also against this Netflix series that I watched. I think it was called The Blue Zone. And it was talking about these specific areas of the world where they have large amounts of population living past 100. And it was a really, really interesting, I think it was a docuseries, where they're trying to figure out like what's the common denominator. It's not like these are outliers, right? Where there's like maybe one or two people living past 100. No, it was like large amounts of population in these specific parts of the world. And so they were investigating like what's their diet, what's their lifestyle, like what's happening there. And in many of these areas where they had these, you know, populations of people living so much longer, one of the common denominators was the elderly had purpose and they were respected and they knew it, right? So one of the examples I'm thinking about was like this woman who was regarded, like was held in such high regard in her community because of her age. She was so old. And so the children and, you know, the younger people would come to her because they knew she had wisdom and they would learn from her, and whether she was teaching them how to cook or sew or craft or even just be in her presence, like this woman had a sense of purpose. And that was true for all of these different cultures, right? Some of these women, maybe like in some of the different examples of the countries that they shared, like they still got up every single day, you know, in their 100 plus age and walked all the way uphill to church and then, you know, walked down, or they were gardening every day, or they were preparing meals. Like they were doing something that gave them some sense of purpose. And purpose, according to all of this research, is insanely important in like in the longevity of life and how you experience it, right? Because once we lose purpose, think about yourself as a young person now, like how miserable is it when you just feel like I don't have a purpose? And take that into like your older years of life where you already kind of know like I'm getting to the end, and then compound that with like not only thinking like what is my purpose or do I even have a purpose, but like actually having that be the reality. You're just in a home and people come and visit you every once in a while, but like you're contributing nothing. It just like the brain deadens. And on top of that, it contributes to this idea that I'm talking about, which is we see the elderly as not purposeful. So it's that bigger picture as well, where in our culture, if we're not seeing elderly as like purposeful, useful, then we just discard them. And I think that's a really sad way to live as well. I think another example of this is, and I touched on this a bit earlier, but trying to hide our age, right? So whether we're doing that with like makeup or Botox or hair color, or all the different things. And again, I'm not demonizing these things. It's not like I don't wear makeup. It's not like I'm, you know, not covering up the grays for now. Listen, I am welcoming the day that I have enough grays to go fully white, but my hairdresser says we're not there yet. So at this point, we still got to like do the maintenance things. But, you know, as we try and cover up our age, it's almost like we're just sending this signal, especially to the younger generations, that like we're rejecting it, that it's bad to age, right? That there's no value in being older. We need to hide our wrinkles. We want to look more like them. We want to look more like our youth. And we even do that. I've noticed this so much, like, I'm not on social media anymore, but when I was on social media, I would see the trends of like, you know, how like millennials versus Gen X or Gen Z or Gen Y or whatever it is. And like, you know, these trends, like trying to pit one another against each other. And in this way where the older generations were always being like laughed out or put down. And I'm like, when did this happen? And in this book that I referenced, The Collapse of Parenting, one of the points that he brings up is like, this has been a subtle shift that's been happening in media for a while now. So if you look at, and this is going to sound like a silly example, but like we see how powerful media is. If you look at like sitcoms from like the 50s, the 60s, even like the 70s, there was an undertone in those sitcoms or even in those like TV shows, whatever show it was, where there was like respect for parents. And you could see this very subtly in just like the storyline. So if there were like parents and kids like in the scene, the parents would be in control and they would be like the authority person in that scene. And if there were jokes, it was between the parents, and like it was just a respectful undertone between children and parents. Hopefully I'm describing that in a clear way, the way I'm thinking about it. But if you flash forward, and okay, let me give an example to try and pull this together before I move to the flash forward. Think about Full House. We'll even go into like the 90s, okay? Because this was still a thing even then. Full House, hopefully you know the show. In that series, in that like sitcom, the parents were respected, right? Danny Tanner, Jesse Katsopoulos, Joey Gladstone, like they weren't a joke. Right. They were respected. And when the children had problems or they were struggling with something, they came to the parents at some point in the episode. there was like a sit down and a conversation and a resolution, and it modeled this healthy relationship between a child and a parent, or the authoritative like person or guardian in the house. It modeled that that's what it's supposed to look like, especially when we have challenges, but even in the fun parts, right? That the kids would always be having fun and like spending time within the home. It was like a very rare scene for there to be like a scene outside of the home or at the school or like at a party. Most of life was happening in the home. That's just what it was. Now, if you flash forward to sitcoms and, you know, TV shows that are on now, it is the complete opposite. So I was watching like a show the other day, and it was so interesting to see the dynamic between the parents and the children completely flopped. So the kids were the main storyline, and like they were just joking at the expense of the parents constantly. So the parents were like so old, so out of touch, had no idea like what was going on. And like if the kids had a problem or a challenge, they were trying to solve it by themselves as kids with the other kids, which like, I know this seems subtle and it's like, oh, it's TV, but this is what is playing out and really happening in the world. So we're modeling this in the media that like when there's a problem, like you go to your peers, like your parents, what do they know? And like you see this in the TV shows and it's all fun and games and it's all like a joke, but it's really not a joke because it is modeling and it is conditioning our children, our young people to almost lose trust, almost lose respect for the parents, the guardians, our elders, and that's who they should be going to for everything in life, but especially when we're talking about these challenges, for example. So the reason that I wanted to bring this up is because like this is a big problem in my opinion. And what I see this leading to is, as I just said, children looking to each other, looking to their peers for advice, for, you know, what they should be doing, what they shouldn't be doing, for modeling in all ways. And on top of that, because their peers are everything to them, they care more about what their peers think about them, right, than their own families. And again, this is another shift that happened culturally, because it used to be many, many years ago that like what your parents thought about you, or even like what your parents' friends thought about you, or even your elder siblings, what they thought about you, that mattered. That was a big deal. To lose respect or to let your parents down was like crushing. And now it's just the opposite. Like, let your parents down, disappoint them. I'm not saying this is true for every family, but for a large majority of like our culture, like if you let your parents down, no big deal. You let your friends down, or like you are embarrassed in front of your peers, and that's like the end of the world. Now, don't get me wrong. I don't think that we should like have no regard for what our peers say, but when we've shifted our focus and our emphasis on what's important, especially as children, so far away from the people that should be like the ones that we look to, they are the ones that can help us develop as healthy individuals, because no one has your best interest in heart like your family, like your parents. Now, I know there might be some outliers here, some parents that maybe aren't doing it right, but in general, the people who are raising you, they have your best interest and they have the full picture, right? They have experience. They have the ability to support you in different ways that peers and other children don't. So those are two of the big problems, right? We're finding kids looking to one another for advice and for modeling. And also we're finding them putting more emphasis on the peers and the other kids in their age for like, I care more about what they think than what my parents think, maybe what other elderly people think. And because of that, like actions follow, right? So we're doing things to impress our peers rather than impress or make our families or parents proud. Those are big, big issues as well. And that connects to what ends up happening, which is we are allowing our children to be developed, not by us, right? The parents, the family unit, but by the outside world, okay? But they are going to be developed by people on social media, people in their schools, like the peers, people on the sports team, which isn't something that we want to avoid completely, because we want our younger ones to have interactions and our teens and, you know, all of that to be involved and to be able to take in information from the outside world. But when that is what is developing them, when that is what is creating their identity versus the safety that is created inside of a home and the people who are inside of the home with the best interest, right, and care and love for the child, like, that's where we start creating these big problems. And I say that because children do not have a sense of identity, right? They don't have a sense of identity. I just believe that as parents, our number one job is to help them create a sense of identity. That's our job. It's not the teacher's job. It's not social media's job. It's not their friend's job. And it's also, it is partly their job, but we have to establish that for them. And sometimes I'll hear parents say, well, it's not my job to decide. I'm not even going to go down the rabbit hole of like how much we're giving to kids to decide, but they'll say things like, well, it's up to them to decide this. It's not, right? If they don't learn it from us, they will learn it from someone else. So, I mean, great if they learn it from someone that you like trust and you're like, oh, this is a good person to learn it from. But if you're not creating the foundation for them for like values, morals, like what is best for them through your lens, because you're the parent, you get to decide that, then that's going to happen to them just like as a byproduct. And it doesn't always turn out well. We end up putting our children in a position where they are not only vulnerable, but they're susceptible to influence of their identity because we haven't given them a strong foundation. And I think about this, like when I think about myself, especially as a new parent, like being vulnerable, feeling lack of confidence, not being really solid in that identity, we're just open. We're open to so much more. And so anytime we're in that place where we're just vulnerable and we're susceptible, like it's great if we have influences that come in that are really helpful, but like if we don't, it's very damaging. And I'm using the example of like being a young parent, and I was still an adult, and there were things that I'm like, oh my gosh, like if I would have had this type of influence or this person come in at this time and help me build that identity, like it would have been different. Still being an adult, like I could manage that in a different way, but being a child and not having the right influences come in and really help us solidify that identity, we are just left to be like in a dangerous place, in my opinion. So all of this to say is we can't wait around as parents, right? We can't be passive, just letting our kids decide who they want to be or what they will do. And even think about how silly that is when we think about it. It doesn't sound as silly when they start to grow, because it's just such a widely accepted thing in our culture to be like, oh, I'm gonna let them like kind of like figure this out. And I'm not like saying we should helicopter and control every single thing that they do, but we've gone very far in the other direction where we're not helping them decide enough, you know, collaboratively and like with our guidance and sometimes our definitive like answers, like this is how it's going to be done. And if we parented like that when they were little, like think about it. If we were like, you know what, it's not my position to tell my child not to pick their nose or not to like stuff their hand in their dirty diaper. Like that's not for me to decide. Like what? That'd be so reckless. That'd be dangerous. So at some point, we were parenting in a non-passive way where we're like, hey, you can't do this. You can't do this. This isn't good for you. And I don't think that should stop, right? That shouldn't stop. And I'm going to even take it so far as to say, like, when our kids are in their 20s and stuff, we still have the responsibility to look at them and be like, this shouldn't happen. Now, at that point, whether they take our advice or not, there is obviously more room for them to decide. They're not living under our home, so we can't ground them or whatever you do. But we still have, I think, the responsibility to step into that authoritative role and to help guide and assume the position of the elders and to have the respect that that position position requires. At some point, I believe that there is going to need to be a turning point for how we are living culturally, how we are respecting ourselves as aging people, right? Not hiding it, not trying to look younger all the time, not trying to be younger, not trying to act younger, but like embracing the fact that we are older, we are wiser. That comes obviously with the territory of looking that way. And with that, we have the knowledge, we have the information, and we are in the position to guide and to be the ones who provide support and answers and help for our children. I think that this is just like such an important topic. Obviously, we're talking about it on this episode. Now, some of the ways that we have helped really reel some of this in culturally, I'll say a big one for us was obviously homeschooling, right? We were in so many different types of schools, like really, really great schools. I'm talking the supposedly the best of the best when it comes to financially, right? If you're paying 25 grand a year to send your child to school, you're thinking, hey, this is the cream of the crop. But I will tell you, especially at that level, there was so much happening that was in the opposite direction of what we wanted to be modeled and taught to our child that I was like mind blown. And then we were also in a really great parochial school, right? Something that aligned with us values and moral wise, but still we were leaving our child in the hands of someone that one, we didn't know. We knew that they had good intentions for them, but was he learning what was the most important to us on a daily basis? No. And also, for the most part, he was being influenced and taught by his peers. And I don't think it's not an important part to be around peers. He still is in his homeschool co-op, but it is in less of a, like, it's in a way where it's not flooding him. He still has the ability, especially at this young age, to develop and really like get stable in his identity without the constant like bombardment of all these other like influences that make it really hard for you to decide who you are, not who these other 20 kids in my class are and how they act and what I should be doing. Like that makes it really hard. And I think most of us in this world, and I have my hand up for this as well, we're in a school setting like this and can probably pinpoint interactions and times where we changed who we were or how we acted based on how what was cool or what other kids were doing. And as many times as we can raise our hand for that, like consciously that we know we did that, times that by 100, maybe even 1,000 for how much that happened unconsciously. It just does. Now, I'm not demonizing. Okay, I'm not going to say that. I'm not suggesting that everyone needs to like homeschool. I'm not going to say that either. I think that is a great option, but it might not be the option for everyone. And I want to suggest some other things that you can do to kind of start pulling back the authority into your hands and to really help our little ones establish this respect for their parents and the respect, shifting it back into like the home and further away from like the peers, right? Like wanting to impress the peers more than the parents, caring more what the peers think than the parents, like all of that. Like, let's talk about how we can start shifting that, even if you're not like, hey, I'm not going to homeschool. That's like not an option for me, or that's not what I want to do. I'm going to give you, let's see, what do I have? Like four simple ways that you can just help create some of this shift and take back some of this healthy control. So the first one is to be mindful of what your little ones are consuming, right? I gave some examples like in media, even that just seems so harmless. with like the undertones, right? The undertones of like disrespecting the parents, like by making jokes at their expenses, or, you know, the undertone of like, they don't know what they are talking about. We don't go to our parents for help. We go to our friends, or we figure it out on our own. Like those undertones are like really creating the especially unconscious, like ideas in their mind about like, this is how the world functions. Like it's not even an option. Like this is just how it works. So be mindful of what they're consuming, watch what they're watching, and scan for things that you're like, ooh, what's that? Like, what does that mean? Like, how is that influencing their little brain? There are a couple great apps that we use if we're going to let Watson have like screen time. So instead of Netflix or Disney, we use Yippee. And we use Great American. So these are TV networks or apps that are filtered. They're filtered for the content and also like the context of that as well. Like, what are the undertones? What is the messaging? What are we teaching here? It's not all like learning stuff, but even in like the entertaining TV shows, there's still this like underlying, like this underpin of like respect for adults and authority and things that we just believe are really important. Same thing with like video games. Like we don't do gaming systems here. We don't do video games. But there is like one specific app that that we were introduced to that if Watson wanted to play a video game, which I get it, like there's some fun parts of that. I used to play Sonic, Sega, like come on. But something that we felt really comfortable with, and you can download it on your iPad or Android or whatever, it's called True Play, T-R-U Play. And I'll link all of this in the notes. But that's one that like is a video game, but it also has like the undertones of like teaching things that are important, like kindness, respect, all of these things that like should be woven in, I feel like, to any kind of media, even in just a subtle way. Okay, so that's the first one. The second one is to prioritize your family time. And this doesn't just mean like, oh, we sit down and have dinner together every night, which we do, but it also means like have fun together. Because if your family isn't a place like that they want to be, if family time only means serious time, or like we get work done together, we only do homework together, we only do school together, we only do chores together, like I don't blame them. They're not gonna want to be around you. Doesn't mean that they get that choice sometimes, but like it would make sense that they would be more drawn to their peers where they get to have fun. So bring the fun into the family as well. Have more fun together. We play so many games together. Like we love board games. We love to go out and about and do stuff together. Like Anthony and Watson, they do their Sunday chores. One of them is like they do the grocery shopping together on Sundays. And I would say 99% of the time on the way there, they stop at Pins Mechanical. If you're familiar in Columbus, it's like a video arcade game. But they go there just to like play the duck pin bowling and to like let Watson go up and down the slide. So like, that's fun. We also do fun vacations together and we just make sure to mix in fun. So like Watson wants to be around us. Like, and that's something that, you know, we pray to the Lord that we continue to pour into, so that as he gets older and, you know, he has more decisions, that like he will decide like, oh, I'd rather be spending time at home tonight than doing this. Like when push comes to shove, when there is an option, like think about how lovely that is. If it's like a Friday night and we're doing movie night and he could like go out on a date or like, you know, go with friends, like maybe every once in a while he's like, I just want to spend time like with my parents tonight, or I'd like to watch a movie with them or have a friend over here so we can be together. Like, I'm not saying we want that all of the time. That would be weird. But we want our kids to want to be around us. So that's the second thing. Prioritize your family time and to make sure that there's some fun in there. The third thing is to say no more. I have seen families where they like it's always yes, right? Can I have a friend over for this? Can I go to a friend's house and do this? And it's like, yes, yes, yes. And the friends then become, and it just continues to allow the friends to become the most important part. Like that's where they get their fun. That's where they get their happiness from. And this kind of connects to the first part, but we have to remind ourselves that it is okay to say no. And we do this with Watson very, very often. Like it's okay to say no. to going to a friend's house, it's okay to say no to going and doing, you know, sometimes the arcade or like the other fun things that he wants to do, because we have to establish the boundaries there and also remind him that like, it's okay to say no, and it's okay to be bored, and it's okay to just be with your family, and it's okay to just like have to listen to us, right? So saying no more, not always, is important for establishing or continuing to establish the respect, the authority, and keeping the kids where you want them to be sometimes, which is more often, at least in our case, with us. And then the last part is to model respect for the elders. I think one thing that we've just done, even unconsciously when Watson was like young, was just like talk about old people in a respectful way. Like I would say, like anytime we would see an older person, and it would be like obviously the appropriate, it would like context, it would just kind of float up naturally, where I would just be thinking and saying things like, man, they have so much wisdom. Old people, they just know so much. They've been around, like, and I would just kind of, this wasn't always for him to like learn, but this is how my brain works. Like one of my favorite things is just to get somewhere with an old person and just hear them talk. I mean, if you've ever done that with someone who's like in their 80s, 90s, the things that they have had access to as far as experiences, I'm like, oh my gosh, just fill me up. So model this for your children, right? Talk about elders in a way where it's like, yeah, they understand that these people have wisdom to offer and that they are to be respected. Spend time with older people, right? Like go out and be where they are. Sometimes we'll go in and donate our time at community centers or, you know, at a nursing home. And it's like modeling that these people are worth our time. That is so important as well. And then, like I said before, like the language that we use around elder people, their wisdom, all of it, it's just modeling that is so, so important. So I know this is a little bit longer of an episode, but I just really wanted to explore this topic fully. A lot of this is all of this, my personal beliefs. You might not rock with everything that I'm saying, but I trust and hope that there is something in here at least that like gets your juices flowing, or that you're like, oh, I didn't think about it that way. Because there's nothing more important than the generation that is going to continue to keep this world hopefully spinning round. So what I want to leave you with today is just this reminder that it is, as I said in the beginning of this episode, it is an honor to grow old. And we want to model why. And we want to reinforce the belief that there is so much to respect and admire in regards to aging and people who are older. And also with that, allowing the focus, the emphasis, and the respect to be in the elder people to help raise us, to help the little ones like develop their sense of identity, and to like create these healthy individuals that will, as they grow up, like go out into the world and have the complete autonomy at that point to decide what they want to do from there. But if we give them a healthy foundation, at least in the beginning, they're going to be so much more well-equipped and so much less susceptible to all the noise that's going on in the world today that's pulling at them at all angles to be like this or to do this or not do this or not be like this. Like, if we don't give them a strong foundation of who they are, they're going to develop it. They're going to create that identity from everything else that's happening out in the world. If you're okay with that, then let it rock. But if you're not, then consider all these things that I talked about. Maybe you were talking back with me, but consider these things that I talked about today. So that is all I have for you today, my friends. Let's celebrate age. Let's respect age. Let's bring authority back to the people who should have it, the parents, the guardians, the people with the best interest in mind for our children. And let's help these little people develop into individuals with a strong sense of identity. Okay? Alrighty. That's all I have today. Let's live a meaningful life, my friends. I say it each and every time. And we'll chat soon.
Hey, thanks so much for listening along with me today. I hope you found this episode helpful. And if you could do me a solid, drop me a 5-star rating below and please comment what you liked about this podcast and how it was helpful for you. And if it was, I would love for you to share this with a friend. That is one way that I can continue to grow this podcast, reach more people, and continue to spread the good word. Also, make sure you hit subscribe on your way out so that you never miss an episode with myself, the Mindset Maniac. I'll see you here next time.